We would like to thank LSR for sponsoring the Let's Be Frank video podcast. LSR produces Southern Cane Pure Cane Sugar, which is only grown, refined, and packaged in Louisiana. Southern Cane is available in your local Associated Grocers and Rouse's supermarkets. We are kicking off episode number 2 on the Let's Be Frank video podcast. I am your host, Jason DeWay. Joining me will be head coach Frank Monaco, Hall of Fame coach as always. And we have a great show for you tonight. Tonight we're going to be talking LHSAA football, week 1 recaps and week 2 previews, LSU and Tulane recaps and previews. We'll talk some Saints. We'll have on special guest head coach at St. Aug High School, Robert Valdez. And we're also going to have Coach Monica in the Let's Be Frank segment talk about college football, spring football games. So, Coach, you know, we're shooting this show right now, but there's a lot going on in terms of weather. And again, there's a lot of games that we're still not definitive on when they're going to be played for Friday night. What was that like when you were in that situation, as we are now, of trying to get your team prepared, but also trying to ensure the safety of your players and your community?
Well, the worst part about it is that you're at the mercy of what the civil defense people tell you to do. They say it's because the school is out. That means that no one can practice and no one's allowed on campus because of safety issues. And we understand that because some families like to leave and they have to prepare and stuff like that, that life is more important than a game at the time. But I think the most important thing is to try to get back to normal as soon as you possibly can and bring the kids back in as soon as you possibly can where it's safe. Now, you don't want them on the road. You don't want them to be put in harm's way whatsoever. But I think it's the most important thing when you make your adjustment. Way back at camp, you always cover this. In fact, you always have a hurricane phone list. You have a hurricane preparation and say, well, this is hurricane week. This is what we would do. And you have contact points. You have contact kids. They contact one another. This is your group that you're responsible for contacting. And just in case you have to call an impromptu practice, at 7 o'clock in the morning, just to make sure that but you don't want to skip a game at all possible, no matter what. You don't want to lose a game. You only get 10 during the year. People pay for those 10. And so you want to make sure that you give the public what they want in the school and the players want to play. So the most important thing that you get prepared for that long before it happens.
Coach, I can't remember the year, but I believe it was 2008. I think it was my junior year. I remember the power was out. We had no electricity. And somehow you got on the phone and gathered us together. We were lifting weights in the weight room with I don't even know if there was power on. But I remember we had the doors open and we're sitting there lifting weights and we were getting ready for the game. So, again, people always talk about your preparation, but I can firsthand speak to it. Regardless situation, you always had your protocols in place and knew how to implement them. And that's what made you the coach you were.
Well, thank you, Jason. One year we played 2 games in 1 week, the year of Katrina. Right. We played 2 games in 1 week and it was pretty much fun, but the kids were pretty tired.
All right, Coach, let's go ahead and jump into prep talk. We have a ton of games, so we're going to kind of roll through them. Let's go ahead and recap week 1 games. First off, Coach, it was Newman defeating St. Charles 24-10. Seems like the turnovers just got to the Comets in that game, and Newman did a good job defensively.
Yeah, I was able to watch it, Justin. St. Charles played well. They moved the ball the first series, but they had a couple untimely turnovers, and Newman came back and scored on some big pass plays. It was just a game that got away from them a little bit, but they had a chance at the end. They're going in on the 2-yard line. They get a penalty to push them back when the score is 24-10. But it's a great game. It's a credit to Coach Nelson Stewart and Coach Stein who have these guys ready to play. I mean, St. Charles, that's just the game. They're not down and out. They'll be ready to go and for the rest of the year.
There's still a lot of football to be played as we think we'll get our next matchup, Catholic. Defeated Destrehan on the road 23-20 in a game that was dealing with weather problems. Catholic had to come back in that ball game. But again, just two heavyweights going toe to toe. And you have to love that these two teams were stepping up to the plate this early to take on each one another.
Yeah, they say the rain was so bad at one time the turf actually bubbled. So they suspended the game for a little bit, and then both sides got a little break and they came back. But Catholic scored within the last 20 seconds of the game to take the lead. But Destrehan, that's a big barometer test for them and exactly where they are. They got great talent. They'll be there at the end, especially on the public school side. So look for Destrehan to run the table from here on out.
Coach, in our next matchup, we had Rummel defeating Lafayette Christian 42-35. That game was played in the Dome, if I'm not mistaken. Rummel, again, the higher classification team, but Lafayette Christian is every ounce of athletic as anybody else in the state. But Rummel pulling out this big early win will help with power points later on.
I talked to my son, Nicholas Monica, said in the first half, they actually cornered the quarterback a little bit, but in the second half, they couldn't catch him. He said all of a sudden he had a second win, and he scrambled around for 5 or 6 seconds, then find somebody open. He said he was just lightning in the bottle. It made a big difference, but he was happy to win the game, especially winning it on the ground like he did and controlling the clock. His defense had to come up with a big stop at the end of the game, so it's a big win for him. And I don't know in that division who can beat Lafayette Christian.
Yes, it's going to be very tough for anybody to beat them at that level. As we move on to our next one, now the game that was played in the Dome was Robin Gap Nakushi defeating John Curtis 27-12. I don't think you'll see a team beat Curtis that way, Coach, and nationally ranked for a reason. I don't have any concern over this Curtis team bouncing back, but again, any team that's able to come into Louisiana and knock off Curtis in that way.
I'm impressed you pronounced that so well, that just because that's a hard. I'm glad I graduated from that place. I couldn't graduate because I couldn't spell it. But anyway, I understand they had four top-notch Division I guys. One was a big tight end that's already committed to North Carolina. So highlights of it on tape, and quarterback was a big-time guy. They had some players. I mean, that was no fluke, and because just Curtis to be there slugging it out with them says a lot about Curtis's football team. So that doesn't mean anything about their future in the league.
Yeah, 100%. Catholic League still that's where you're going to get your biggest test of the season and take your biggest punches. In our next matchup, we had St. James defeating East St. John 20-0. St. James continuing to pick up where they left off last season. Again, took that loss in the state championship and really rebounding against a big 5A opponent in East St. John.
East St. James is going to be really good on defense. And East St. John is still trying to find their way. I think they have a way to go. They always competed well in their district. When district play starts, that they'll be a different team. Unfortunately, they play St. Aug this week, so there's no light at the end of that tunnel. But St. James will always be tough, especially at home.
All right, in our next matchup, we had Carr defeating Shaw 48-21. Coach, you said it, and it's not really a shocking surprise that Carr was able to win this ball game the way they were. We know Shaw has a ton of talent on the offensive side of the ball, and they're going to continue to grow as the season goes. But Carr is on another level from most teams in the state, and there's no reason to hang your head whether you lose by double digits or not. That's a really talented ball club, regardless what point of the year you play them at.
No, I mean, the Carr's on a different level. And I mean, it was kind of I'm going to show you who I am, because they're both West Bank schools. Some of them share the same players, come from the same neighborhood, basically. And so there's a little rivalry there. So I'm sure Carr wanted to make this particular statement. I know it's a sloppy field, but don't discount Shaw out, because in their division, they'll be one of the teams to beat.
Our next matchup, we had Edie White defeating Holy Cross 27-14. Coach, the Veer, right? Throwback football, Veer style, defeated the kind of spread out style that we see out of Holy Cross. And again, we know that this Edie White team has been very consistent. And once again, we see consistent results against quality opponents, and a big week one matchup for both teams, but Cardinals were able to pull out the win.
It's a big win for Edie White. And I talked to Coach Hussain during the week, and he said that, you know, he didn't know if he can hang with them, but he's going to try. And he certainly did more than that. And it looked like he controlled the ball in the game, and it was very, very so – they always would be physical. And, you know, so when you go down there to play a Thibodeau, you better get ready to – because they will always be very, very good on defense. And they run a triple option type of offense, and they incorporate a different running style that you don't see very often, so they're hard to defend. But they will hit you. So look for them now in their division to be one of the teams to reckon with, along with Shaw, along with the St. Charles Catholic, along with U-High. There could be four teams there that could be in the semifinals at least for next year.
Yeah, a big contrast from like John Curtis, who sits in Veer all day. They'll run pistol, they'll run some gun, and that's just – you don't see that very often from a Veer-type team, but again, Edie White has things rolling in the right direction. As we roll along to our next matchup, as St. Aug defeated McDonough 35 big in that ball game, as we're going to talk to Coach Robert Valdez later on in the show.
Coach, St. Aug has a ton of talent on both sides of the field and big offensive and defensive front, and they kind of flex their muscles in this matchup against a McDonald 35 team that's consistently improved over the past few seasons, but running up against a brick wall and a well-coached Purple Knights ball club.
Right. St. Aug executed so well offensively. They scored on the first five possessions, but the game was over at halftime. And I think, you know, that's kind of the game that you want. Maybe you can play some reserves there. I don't know if the coach did or not. But the bottom line is that it just goes to show you that St. Aug will be one of the teams to reckon with in the Catholic League. Of course, they all will be, you know. So you can bloody your nose every week in that league. And St. Aug is back. So Coach Valdez will have them organized, and he will get them physical.
Coach, quick thought after this ball game. You know, one thing I've always noticed about the way you've coached, and in these games that kind of get on a runaway train, kind of get out of hand, I've seen you tell the officials very early on, at some points even as early as the end of the first quarter in certain situations, throw a holding call, don't allow this game to get too worse and start kind of running that clock. But one thing you always did was you kept that first team defense out. You kind of mixed in some of the younger guys, and you wanted to allow them to get a goose egg on the board. You know, a lot of people talk about in certain situations running up the score or keeping a team down on defense. What's kind of your approach on that? Because I know a lot of people think that not allowing the other team to score a point at the end of the game is, you know, like low class, but I've seen nothing but class from you on your end, and you made sure offensively to kind of keep your foot off the brake. So what's kind of your approach in that matter of running up the score or keeping your defense on the field and the way that you approach the game?
I never did like to run up the score, Justin. I think when you get to 40, that's plenty enough if you're ahead of enough. And I think three touchdowns is sort of my barometer. You know, that was the benchmark. If you were up by three touchdowns and going to the fourth quarter, that's a pretty good barometer. When it comes to leaving your defense on the field or not, you know, the defensive coaches work extremely hard and they can take a lot of pride because a shutout means it's kind of a macho thing. But I did not want them to be the point of contention. There were times when if you had a streak going and you were trying to keep a streak alive or something like that, that's different. But if someone's already scored on you, it didn't matter. And I said it didn't matter in the big picture. Nobody's going to remember that. You know, so let those other guys play and get them some experience because, listen, they practice too, just like the first team does.
Thank you, Coach. And looking at our next matchup, we had Brother Martin taking on East Ascension, a new coach at East Ascension. They dropped their first game 23-14. I think East Ascension, Coach, we've talked about it a ton over the years. It feels like they're close. This is an opportunity they had against a really big opponent in Brother Martin, but, again, Catholic League school proved to be a little bit too much. 4-5A ball club out of Gonzales.
Yeah, this was a little bit closer than the score indicated, and Coach Mathurin's done a great job in the short time that he's been there. He's still going through some growing pains there, and that's just the first ball game. It's not the way you want to open up with a team like Brother Martin, as you said, because they're so well schooled and they have so many players on that team. But it wasn't easy for Brother Martin too. It was a well played game, a very physical game. I had to go on the road, and I really think going on the road is really helps a football team out early. You grow up, you know, get on the bus, you get to you learn how to leave early, you learn how to go to another place, a different environment. I think your team really matures when you go on the road early like that, and so I think Brother Martin gained a lot from that, not only the win, but the fact that he played a quality opponent.
Absolutely. Looking at our next matchup, we had Lutcher defeating Slidell 28-12. Coach Jenkins has to be pleased with the way his team played in this game. We know they return a lot of guys offensively, and putting 28 points on the board against a youngish, a newly trying to cohesive unit in Slidell, pretty impressive outing for the Bulldogs.
Well, I understand that Slidell was a lot better than anticipated, so it wasn't just a slam dunk for Lutcher. So they had to play. Lutcher's defense was very, very good, and you know, Coach Jenkins' son is also the quarterback, so that's a fun thing for him. They're running the ball. They have a quality running back. So they're a team in their division, you know, that we'll be reckoned with like they are every year. But this is a good win for Lutcher.
Thanks, Coach. And you mentioned Coach Jenkins having to coach his son. You've had that experience as well as you know, coaching family members. Or how difficult is that to balance being a coach and being a relative in any capacity without being overly harsh or critical while staying consistent among your ball club?
I think the most important thing is that you leave it on the field. If you coach your son, something stays on the field, it stays on the field. You don't bring it home with it and bring it up again at the dinner table, you know, and forget all about it. But I think the bottom line is that sometimes you're so hard on him, you go overboard just to show everybody you want to be fair, rather than just coach and just let it go. And I think that's very, very important. Let it be a natural response on your part, not something, don't make it any harder for him than it is for anyone else. Just make sure that everybody understands that I'm going to treat them all the same.
All right, Coach, in our last matchup, we had Dallas of Jesuit taking on Jesuit of New Orleans, 28-20 win in favor of Dallas. Again, Jesuit had a rough season last year. Coach Manali, we expect to get things on in the right way, right direction. But, you know, their schedule doesn't get a ton easier from here because, as you've mentioned before, when Jesuit calls people up, not a bunch of people want to pick up that phone and play them. And that's why you see them playing a team from Dallas this week.
Yeah, I think it's a great matchup that they play another school from another archdiocese, but another Jesuit school. And I understand they did tailgating together, did a lot of things together. Then they played the game. Jesuit of New Orleans hit a couple long passes for Coach Manali. Had to be really pleased with that because that's not it. That's not what he normally does. That's not how he normally wins. But he had some success doing that and rotating a couple of guys at quarterback. So, again, they're in the Catholic League, and you know what to expect when you play Jesuit. They will be in position. They'll be well coached, and they'll be well motivated.
Absolutely. As we move on to our next segment, which is going to be some of the previews that we have.
We got to give a little credit to Riverside Academy because they lost to Terrebonne, a 5A school, but that was a shootout. I mean, for them to score 40-something points against a 5A school on the road, might add, that's a big achievement.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about them in a bit as well. Really impressive performance from them. Looking at some of our previews, we have St. Charles taking on Lutcher in a game that we're going to be calling. Coach, again, We know that there are expectations of some games being moved, but St. Charles looking to rebound in their matchup. Their defense gave up 23 points a week ago. It's going to be a tough challenge to take on this offense of Lutcher that returns 10 starters and has a lot of high-powered weapons offensively.
Jason, this is remnants. They're playing it on Sunday afternoon. That's remnants of the old Lutcher Reserve that people old like me will remember. We played in that game. It was featured by a mile parade on each side and the whole deal. So this has remnants of doing that. As soon as I heard that, it was moved to a Sunday at 3 o'clock, and that was the time slot for the old game. But two quality football teams, and St. Charles looking to rebound against a real good Lutcher team. And they, you know, it's kind of like a wounded nutria. He normally comes out and scratches a little bit harder. But Lutcher will probably be prepared because the last couple of years, St. Charles got the better part of that game. So it will be a big crowd, a rowdy crowd. And the anticipation of this game is always really good. It's a great River Parish rivalry. And we need more of those. I think teams, especially the River Parishes, should play one another. And, you know, because for years they've, we have this coach changes. He didn't want to play because he didn't want to lose or blah, blah, blah. But the fans need these kind of games.
And, Coach, I don't care when this game is, where this game is. Put it on Friday, put it on Saturday, put it on Tuesday at 12 o'clock. This game is going to have a ton of people there. And we know that there's going to be a ton of energy. So exactly. It should be an exciting matchup. Looking at our next game, we have Newman taking on Riverside on the road. Newman feeling pretty good about themselves after that win against St. Charles. Riverside feeling like they were a few plays away from beating a big 5A opponent in Terrebonne. And I think it'll be fascinating to see what Coach Roussel can do with this ball club that might not be as deep as some of these other schools, but they definitely have the front-end talent to match up with most teams in the state.
I think they have explosive players. You know, Riverside, they can live by the explosive play. Newman would be a little bit more methodical, and they'll dial up a nice pass route here or there against them, and they'll be big. But Newman also has some guys going both ways, and that's a big difference in the game the other night. I saw Newman in the fourth quarter was kind of gassed. But St. Charles at the time had a misfortune of a turnover. But the bottom line is Riverside can score from anywhere. They have an electric running back and a couple of receivers that could really go. This should be a real good game. And Riverside is trying to rebound. And what they've done because of their district schedule, Newman's done the exact same thing. They're really top-end loaded on their schedule. to make sure that they got good quality opponents. So when they got in the district that's sort of subpar as far as the week is concerned, it gets them prepared for the playoffs.
Definitely not a bad idea to schedule those big games early to get that those mental reps in preparation. As we look at our next game, we have Brother Martin taking on St. Paul's. Brother Martin got that win on the road just a week ago. St. Paul's is always a very formidable opponent. What do you expect to see in this one?
No, I think that's a great matchup. You know, it's a good game for everybody. I mean, it's a natural game that St. Paul's plays a lot of teams from the Catholic League because they basically could easily be a Catholic League team. They're always physical. They have a good quarterback and a good matchup for Brother Martin. So I haven't heard of where that game will be changed in terms of like the others, but I'm sure that we'll find that out later. But looking forward to see how this game turns out. Two quality football teams, well coached, and that's what you're looking for. You know, when you play teams like that, you're not going to out-coach anybody. You just hope that your players play harder and for four quarters, and whoever turns over the ball the most normally will lose the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Coach, I'd almost argue as well, coaching goes into preparing those young men. So I know you know as well as anybody. That's why you worked your players in practice so hard Monday through Thursday. So that way the war was already, the hardest part of the week was Monday through Thursday. So that way when it comes down to Friday, it's muscle memory. So
it takes care of itself, right?
Yeah. And looking at our next matchup, we have Carr, who, once again, talking about scheduling difficult opponents on the road. There's a long ways to go for Carr as they take on Opelousas, defending state champion. And this is an intriguing matchup because you never know quite how much a road trip is going to impact a team. And that's not a short trip, Coach.
No, it's not. The early word was that game was completely canceled. Now all of a sudden we find out that it's resumed again. It's going to be Saturday. And so, which is good because you don't want to hold your schedule like that. You know, kids practice and they want to play. You know, so, and Opelousas has got some players, but, they don't have as many as Carr does on both sides of the football. I mean, I don't know if LSU has as many as Carr. That'll be a tough task for Opelousas. I don't care where they play the game because Carr is just so well motivated. Coach Bryce Brown has them so well motivated and prepared every week.
Yes. Well, looking at our next game, we have Jesuit taking on Edie White. We talk about fundamental football teams, physical football teams, playing within the systems that they've created. You know, Coach Manali and Coach Lassane against one another. I think this is a fantastic week two game between these two teams. And Edie White kind of riding high after that win against another Catholic League ball club in Holy Cross.
I tell you what, Coach, you won't see these guys win 400 meters on either side of the ball, but what you see – You bloody your nose at the end of the game. I mean, they were busted lips and stuff like that because both teams would be physical in the trenches. And, what do you say, trench warfare? You win the trenches, you win the game.
Yes. Next game we have John Curtis taking on North Shore. Curtis with that rough week one loss. North Shore dropped their game in week one as well. Interesting matchup, but we know – it's very difficult to beat Curtis regularly, much less facing off against a JT Curtis team off a loss. So we'll see how this game goes.
No, you don't want to do that. You don't want to play Curtis after a loss, no matter who it's against, because they always will be real good and as far as running that very attack. And I'm not sure how familiar North Shore is about playing Curtis, and because until you play them, you really don't know all the little things that they do. They do so well. The little minor things that you wouldn't think of, they do extremely well. They practice it at times. They're really good in the special team. They've always had a real good offense, but their defense has really, really been special over all the years. So I don't know what North Shore is playing with. I understand that they're pretty young. But the bottom line is that, Curtis had some turnovers last week, which is uncharacteristic. But so if they hold on to the football, it's going to be a long night for North Shore.
In our next game, we have Rummel taking on U-High. Now, that game has been moved, if I'm not mistaken, to New Orleans. U-High had a 3-point shutout just a week ago in their matchup. We know that they're always big and physical. They might be a quote-unquote smaller classification school, but they play up to the challenge. And it took four quarters for Rommel to put them away just a year ago. So would you expect to see another physical matchup similar to last year?
They're really extremely, extremely big. I watched them in the scrimmage. They're extremely big up front. They played, when I saw them, they played without two stud players. One was the Moses kid that's already committed to LSU, and he played. He's a two-way player. But their quarterback is really special. He's a guy that everybody's after him also. They have several I think, big-time athletes, even from the sophomore to the 12th grade, that would be recruited. And but Romo has some players, too. I mean, they have some players that they did well last week, but UHigh is going to be quite a battle. They did talk about moving to Yeni. They're not sure yet where the slot falls, whether it's the Friday night or Saturday. So, but that game would be moved, and it should be quite a game.
Yeah, I was at the same scrimmage, Coach, and again, ton of athletes on that football field. We know Rommel coming off of last year with all those injuries, really trying to show that, you know, they can turn things around. And I know Nick Monaco have that team ready, and that'll be one of the bigger games slated on the schedule this week. In our next matchup, we got St. Aug taking on East St. John. A lot of talent on the field for St. Aug. We know that there has been a change. Big, highly recruited defensive lineman is transferring out of St. Aug. But regardless, St. Aug has a very talented defensive front, weapons all over the field on offense, a very talented quarterback. East St. John's going to have to find a way to slow them down and make some plays, maybe a turnover or two to flip their luck and make some plays offensively.
You know, East St. John looks like they're a big play offense, and the quarterback likes to throw the ball deep, and that's not gonna hack it against St. Aug. I mean, they got the speed to keep up with the receivers, and I think they have to make it a ground attack of some way to keep St. Aug's offense off the field, and they have to get the game in the fourth quarter. And if not, the game could be over at halftime. Even though this game has been moved to Saturday, which is probably good because both teams can't practice Wednesday and Thursday because school being out, as we talked about earlier. But it's going to be really a difficult task for East St. John to stay with this team for four quarters.
And our last matchup we're going to talk about, we have De La Salle taking on Holy Cross. Both teams dropped a week one matchup. De La Salle took a tough loss on the road against Central. Holy Cross, as we just discussed, went on the road and took on E.D. White. This will be an interesting game against two teams that are looking to turn things around early on in the season because, again, those schedules get more difficult as they go between both of these two ball clubs.
The one thing you get out of scheduling good people, though, Jason, you get some power rankings, and you know that's everything's predicated in the playoffs on that, which I think is a tremendous system. A lot of states wish they had this type of system. Holy Cross, I'm sorry, but De La Salle went to Central. And went to Central, and when they played Central had three guys that were involved in a car accident that didn't play. And so they played shorthanded. But Central also was a team that made it to the semifinals last year. So no slouch there about the loss. Coach Graham is going to have those guys ready. Holy Cross, I'm sure that they felt that they were going to beat E.D. White. So they're coming off a loss. And, you know, Coach Watton is a good football coach. So he's going to have them ready. So this will be an interesting matchup. And, again, it's one of those games that you like to see. We talked about St. Paul playing the Brother Martins. De La Salle, you know, here's another Archdiocese school playing Holy Cross. These are the kind of games that you like to see because both of them are nice, well-known schools, traditional schools, and they need to be playing one another.
These types of games that we mentioned in this Week 2 slate get people to want to go to high school football games, and that's all we can ask for is people to support the product. We have a fantastic product in Louisiana. The amount of talent and athletes we have on the field, even in one high school game, or more than if you go watch a car football game when they take on some of these ball clubs or any Catholic League game, you might see more 4- and 5-star talent on that field, Coach, than two or three states have combined. So go out, support these games and watch them because you're not, again, the high school game is such a great product. It just make sure you go and support it. We're going to go ahead and look at some local college football games. Coach, not much to talk about here if you're an LSU fan. Rough win, ugly win, 44-21 over Nicholls State. But you have to credit Nicholls' rushing attack. They ran the ball up and down LSU, and you lose a defensive lineman in Guillory for the year if you're the LSU Tigers. I don't know what their solution is, and I'm not sure if they're going to find it. As they go on the road to take on a South Carolina ball club this week.
Well, I tell you, the storyline here, Justin, is their defense. And, Jason, if their defense doesn't improve, and I don't see where it can, really, because one is a personnel issue. I think Coach Kelly does a great job. I think he's a good head football coach. He's and a guy that's very, very intelligent. He says all the right things. But yet on the flip side of it, I don't think they're very talented, especially on defense. And I think that Their technique is a little bit off up front. I'm not happy with what I see with their defensive technique, but they just don't have the SEC-type players that they need. And I'm sorry to say this, but I don't think that's going to be their last loss right there. I mean, the last game that they have a poor success on defense. Nussmeier, I think, is a very, very adequate quarterback. I think he's got the traits of a Joe Burrow. They're not running the RPOs that Joe Burrow did, but I think that all those traits. What I did like about their offensive scheme, they had 7-8 man protection and let those two receivers run around a little bit. And I thought three receivers at some time, and I thought that was smart. And they blocked up. He had a lot of time in the pocket. And Kelly was right. If they take away the run, if they can load the box, why not throw it? That's what they've given you, you know, stuff like that. But unless they get better on defense, they will be an average football team. And that comes from the standpoint of the personnel and also comes from their technique. And because, Nichols is a good football team. Everybody forgot about that. And they were a cinch win with 46-point underdog. And I'm sorry I had to get to some sports book myself. But I thought they're a good football team. They know how to run the football. The counter plays that LSU didn't look like they had a clue about how to stop it. It didn't make sense. And, I mean, the quarterback run situation, the Wildcat situation, the kid was a quarterback in high school, but he didn't have to throw it. And all he had to do was run the football and it's a direct snap. So when that normally happens, you can crowd the line of scrimmage and put 10 up there. And they said, dare him to throw it out there. And I'm surprised that they still got away with 145 yards rushing.
I guess maybe you can make the argument, Coach, they were trying to not be too exotic with their scheme to not show anything. But again, I don't know. As they're going to be taking on South Carolina, who handled a pretty good Kentucky ball club, Coach. South Carolina is a notoriously difficult place to play, maybe an underrated atmosphere. I don't think that's an easy win. And again, I think it's going to be a difficult game to go play at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Now, Sanders is a hell of a running back. You know, he's the guy that transferred from Arkansas. And if he touches the ball 20 times, I don't see their defense slowing him down. Now, of course, they're going to have to mix the ball. But again, LSU defense, they have to their cornerback play, their safety play. But more importantly, the defensive line disappears. One of the linebackers plays pretty good. But playing on the road against South Carolina. Now, again, I think Kelly's right. This looks like if they're going to win, I think it's going to have to be one of those 35-31 games.
And our next discussion, we have Kansas State, who knocked off Tulane 34-27 on the road. Coach, a tight ball game. Yet another year where a big opponent comes to New Orleans, and Tulane plays really tight ball game, but just can't come away with it in the end.
Yeah, exactly. And the quarterback, you know, played great. I mean, there was one bad play. It was a fumble recovery, which they call a scoop and score for 60 yards. And that was a big, big turning point in the game. And then there was a controversial call on the touchdown that was actually called back, claiming that the blocker was blocking and the ball was in the air and stuff like that. But it was actually ended up being a natural pick on the play. Those kind of things, we get the close ball games and those things. Hopefully that your team will be far enough ahead where a call does not impact your game. But a credit to Tulane for playing them extremely well, because Kansas State's quarterback was really, really good. And they said he's the fastest kid on the team. So that was a good barometer for them. On the flip side, they go to Oklahoma this week. They played Oklahoma real, real tough last year. But, it doesn't look like they're juggernaut. They won the ball game. They didn't win big last year. But going on the road in that atmosphere, this would be a heck of a challenge for coaches. New coaches team and to see exactly just a little bit more about them before they go to conference play.
Yeah, it's a big game as they go on the road to take on Oklahoma in that game. Oklahoma struggled a week ago with the Houston ball club coached by former Tulane coach Willie Fritz, friend of yours. And this is going to be a big test for Tulane. Again, can they step up to the plate? Absolutely. They've proven time and time again they're not afraid to go toe-to-toe. So we'll see how things play out in that game. But we're going to go ahead and move on to some New Orleans Saints talk. As Coach, we discussed before last week, give me some reason for optimism. I think the Black and Gold fans will take a 47-10 win over the Carolina Panthers. But I'll ask the question, and I hate to sound like such a pessimist, Coach, but I have to be realistic here. How much of this can be credited to the Saints versus how much can be credited to Carolina being a poor football team.
Exactly. That's a good analogy. I mean, everybody's saying the exact same thing. Number one, the quarterback for Carolina couldn't have played it any worse. I mean, and I don't know. I mean, basically, you know, I really like him. I got a chance to meet him and actually be with him in camp for 4 days there. Bryce Young, I'm talking about. But right now, he's struggling in the NFL. And, you know, he's not a real big guy. And so if you're not a real big guy, you better be real, real mobile. But I think the Saints defense is really legit. I think they got some real good players. I think they dialed up a couple of blitzes that people haven't seen before, you know, because Taylor had like three sacks. When have you seen a safety get three sacks in the ball game? Now, the question, and did Carr had a play flawless game? It looked like it was scripted. It looked like one of the video games. It was just scripted. They went down the field. It was kind of easy. But the flip side, they do have some playmakers. Kamara is an excellent playmaker. The wide receiver, Shaheed, he can fly and stuff like that. I've always loved their special teams. That coach, Rizzi, is a phenomenal special teams coach. We were talking about the special teams last week about the new rule, and all I've seen is holding calls on it because you got nine people up front, and every other kickoff, there's a holding call on it. But anyway, I really like to see the Saints season go. But did the Saints tease us this week? Is that more, we could see more of this or something similar to it, or are we going to go back to normal?
Well, Coach, speaking of, you know, next week they take on the Dallas Cowboys. What do you expect to see in that matchup? Would you expect to see more of what we saw just a weekend ago, or would you expect them to kind of come down to earth?
Oh, I think it would be a lot closer ball game. They definitely will come down to earth. It's going to be a battle. Dallas' defense is really good. Dak Prescott just signed a $60 million a year contract. $60 million. That's more than a third world country's economy. You know what I mean? That's tremendous. And he's a good quarterback, a kid that actually rode in the back of my Jeep one time just at the Manning camp. And he's a real, real good guy. I'd love to see him have success. You know, Dallas always is getting a little pressure about not getting to the big game because all the money. I read the other day, it's one of the top two franchises in all sports, and it was worth billions of dollars. So, but I do think they have the personnel. They have receivers that are really, really good. And if the Saints can come away with a victory here, they would be legitimate. But it's going to be hard to win in Dallas. And the spread is very, very simple. It's only 6.5. So that's kind of shocking to me.
Yeah, Coach, what is it? The base is around 3.5 if you're a home favorite in the NFL. So they're basically saying that they believe Dallas is 3 points better. So it'd be interesting to see how that game plays out. But we're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have our special guest, head coach Robert Valdez of St. Aug. Remember, you're watching on Varsity Sports Now.
We would like to thank the Accardo Law Firm for being a supporter of the Let's Be Frank video podcast.
Based out of Gramercy, Louisiana, LSR produces Southern Cane Pure Cane Sugar, which is only grown, refined, and packaged in Louisiana. LSR utilizes the latest innovations in technology, as well as ensuring the growth and stability of Louisiana sugarcane farmers by integrating more than 800 growers in the industry's economic structure. Southern Cane is available in your local Associated Grocers and Rouse's supermarkets.
Since 1972, Riverlands Insurance Services has been dedicated to securing the best insurance products and services available to protect you, your family, your assets, and your business. Our goal has been to establish a strong relationship and partnership between you, the insurance company, and our agency, creating a circle of success that prepares for disasters before they actually happen.
tonight, our special guest has won a state title with the St. James Wildcats in 2015. His coach at West St. John and fresh off a stint at Grambling, joins the Catholic League as St. Aug's head football coach. Our special guest tonight is Robert Valdez. Coach Valdez, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. And we just mentioned that you just came from Grambling. You're now coaching what a lot of people consider to be the SEC of LHSA football. What from your experience coaching young men in college have you really think is going to help you in this new division of football in the Catholic League?
I really think that when it get down to, you know, what I learned and the time I spent with Hugh Jackson is, you know, communicating with kids, you know, from different levels. You know, coach, I tell you, we were spoiled in the River Parishes, and when I was coaching, the years I coached at West St. John and St. James, that you knew the families, you knew where they lived, you sat down and had meals, and you know, it's just a different, like coaching college is a little bit more not as interpersonal, and so that experience is coming down and being, you know, working in the city where there's so many different things to do and so many options and whatnot and so much going on, being able to just relate in so many different levels with the players is something that at the college game it kind of gives you a little bit more hands-on.
Coach, you know, we had some battles. You always had the team well prepared, always a physical football team. And you guys always did a great job. Your kids were always highly motivated. When you were at West St. John, you had great teams over there. And since you've left, I mean, they haven't been the same. And you went to St. James and built a dynasty there. And Coach Davis has maintained that. But you kind of built that. But going through all the years, you mentioned Hugh Jackson a while ago. But who through your whole career you think that really inspired you and kind of became your mentor? You know, we all have this Simon. So who was actually your Simon? Simon Says, we all have this Simon. Who was your Simon in your coaching career?
I tell you, it's funny because it started out in junior high. I went to Edna Carr Junior High when Carr was just a junior high. And Al Ott, you know, Al Ott was on the Chinese Banders 1958 national championship team. And he was just a guy when I started playing junior high football, just his grit and his attention to detail and the love for the game and the work ethic that he instilled in us. I think it's, you know, if there's some research to be done, a lot of the guys that came through that program in that time, you know, we were just prepared for life. We were prepared, and he's someone that I just attribute so much to. You know, my offensive line coach in college, Gary Smith. I was a little bit of a hot kid, coach, coming from Old Prairie Walker High School, and when I got to Southern University and being able to have someone like Gary Smith, kind of just tore me down a little bit, you know, so to speak. I owe him a lot. You know, Larry Favre is the principal at Slidell High School right now, and I just had so many great people pour into me, you know, that has just been able to, you know, what you see now is just a collection of a lot of the influence. That's why I think coaching has got to be one of the best professions in the world, because we touch so many lives. And I know my life, other than my father, was able to be modeled by so many good men. And but it all started with Coach Al Ott and Carr Coovers back in my earlier times when you know, we wore helmets with brown face masks, like, you know.
At least you had one, Coach, when I first started. We had one.
You know, but it was just a great time for me and my maturation development, and that's when I really fell in love with football, when I was in junior high.
Coach, you mentioned something a while ago, and I can identify with it. You know, when you coach in River Parish, you know the people, you know your clientele, you know the players and parents and fans. A place like St. Aug, because I was at Jesuit, you get kids from different parts of the city. And right. the community is bigger, you know, it's a bigger community, and it's, you know, the players, and you get the chance to meet the parents at different times when you meet the St. Aug players and stuff like that, whatever you call that, the nights, the meet the comments night, well, I used to call it, now you meet the nights. But anyway, I think it's, that's a big, big transition. And talk a little bit about, not only that, but talk a little bit about how this Catholic League is going to be a brutal battle. I know you're going to have a good football team, as evidence of your big, big win the other night against McDonough 35. But it's a challenge every week. Talk a little bit about how you're going to accept that challenge.
You know, it's funny because, when you start looking at it and you start looking at so being a New Orleans boy, I went to Old Prairie Walker, but it always was in awe of the Catholic League. Growing up, you look at what Coach Conley was doing, and Brother Martin, with Coach, at that time was Coach Biegas, and at St. Aug when he was there. You look at, we played against the Jesuits with Abramowitz. We lost to Coach Abramowitz in the playoffs. And Hank, of course, was at Shaw. It's funny because, like I said, I got a chance to coach against a guy that I kind of grew up watching, idolizing. But nowadays in the Catholic League and when you add Warren Easton, you add Carr with the traditionals, it's just, you're going to go out every game night. It's just like, man, how many times can we run into the garage door without not having trauma? it's going to be, and I tell my coaches, I say, it's going to be great coaching. Guys are going to be, they're going to put the time in. They're going to burn the candles on both ends, preparing. It's not going to be too much of fooling each other. You better be good at what you do, and you better be able to just run your stuff. Because you get yourself in trouble when you try to do some too much extra, add
you're,
some extra
exactly
season
right.
to the number. Go ahead.
It was always sort of eerie, Coach, because one, you're not gonna out coach anyone. What I could not get used to was sometimes you're gonna play a Friday night, and then you're gonna play a Saturday night, and maybe every now and then you might even play a Thursday night. So you couldn't get in a consistent schedule, and then everybody scouts you every week. I had one coach call me one time. He said, man, I'm really glad to follow you in the film exchange. I said, why? He said, because whatever you add, I add. I guess that's a compliment in a way, because we're copycats. We're all copycats.
Technology is a blessing and a curse nowadays, Coach. We have so much technology that, the film is watched before I even get home. Somebody in the stands or some podcaster or some, everybody pretty much has a beat on what you're doing. You just got to coach your kids up. You have to continue to develop them. There's a big commitment at St. Augustine with our administration of being able to have the resources in place for what we need. With technology nowadays, and with great coaching, you can't hide nothing, Coach. You can't slide in that old, annexation of Puerto Rico play, that they ran on Little Giants and try to sneak it in because somebody's going to know about it.
You can't run the annexation of Puerto Rico. So that's late. You just got a new position with the LHSAA, and I hope that you're going to make an impact and really keep football really, really important, because that was the mission of a Louisiana Football Coach Association when we first started it. And hope that we can keep this thing strong. Now that you're on the other side of the select issue in terms of that, do you see any changes coming in the future, or do you like the format that we presently have?
That's probably, man, that's got to be the toughest question to ask, because I have, I've always been a select, non-select guy. First of all, before we get to that point, I'll never forget when I first got hired at West St. John, and we used to have meetings. You guys understand that, Coach would take us and he would treat us to lunch at a nice little restaurant on the corner of was St. Charles Catholic, and every once in a while we go over there, and I'm sitting there. I just got a job at West St. John. I'm sitting there with Lou Bowden. I'm sitting there with Rick Gailey, Frank Monica, and all these guys, and I'm like, what am I doing here, man? Man, there's more football in this room than there is in the doggone whole state of Louisiana.
You held your own, I guarantee you that.
But we and that made an impact on me, and that's why it was important for me to be active in the High School Athletic Association. Like I said, sometimes I think that where you are at impacts your decision. So, of course, when I was at St. James, I was more into the select, non-select. Even here at St. Aug, I'm still into the select, non-select, just because, I mean, we don't have a big school. We have 630 boys, but, you know, with the multiplier and all that, and we play up and whatnot. But, you know, when you have a chance to choose between 600 boys, I mean, it's a pretty decent chance you're going to get some guys. You know, you'll be able to field a varsity team, a pretty decent varsity team. And it's just some schools don't have that opportunity. You know, so when I tell people that, you know, some people don't have that opportunity, you know, to be able to get those guys. And for us, in our situation, our kids, you know, come to St. Aug because of those things. They come to St. Aug because they want to be leaders. They, you know, so we have a different motivated type of kid. And that's kind of, you know, what happens across the board. You're talking about Catholic and whatnot. You have, it's a different type of kid in these schools that are, you know, that are not in other places. So therefore, there is the rationale behind the, hey, you know what? Your drawing pool may be a little bit better, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know how many people are gonna just address it and say it, but I don't back down from, you know, being honest with myself. You know, we have when you have 630 boys, I probably can find, you know, a couple of running backs, Coach. Mm-hmm.
You know? Coach, tell us a little bit about your team. I mean, I know you had the big win the other night and a great Jamboree game. Tell us a little bit about your team.
You know, it's funny because you walk into a place like this that has so much tradition and so much history, and you have 34 former NFL players and you know, kids that come through there.
And you have tuba players that run 4.4, right?
Coach, tuba players that run 4.4, and they laugh at me when I got in trouble, Coach. I got in trouble because I said that I identified 18 of them that probably could play football. They were like, hey, listen, the band, you leave the band alone.
Coach, let me tell you how smart I was. I tried to get Harry Connick Jr. to play tight end for me. Well,
hey, look, you
he
are
turned
smart.
Out pretty good, didn't he?
It turned out pretty good, Coach. He probably can probably run some plays, but no, we have, like, it's crazy because the band works so hard, you know, and they're so, you know, Mr. Ray does such a great job, you know, with the band, and I'm like, and his staff is probably about the size of my coaching staff, so, you know, he got some guys out there with him, you know. But we're young, and the good thing about it is that, you know, I inherited the program that, you know, when I got the job, and so grateful and thankful for the administration giving me this opportunity, because I, like I said, River Parish is the place I live and, you know, was able to cut my teeth and make my name, but I'm a New Orleans West Bank guy, you know, and being able to come back and come back where I know a lot of people. But we have some youngsters. You know, we have a young quarterback who's a junior, first year starter, Rashawn Coulon, and he pretty much leads us. You know, this kid has a 4.3 grade point average and took 2 years of Mandarin Chinese, so he ought to be able to recover. Just, you know, he ought to be able to identify if it's a two shell or single shell. But and he's just one of those mellow kids, you know. We're young at the skill position. We have a couple of sophomores that's out there that we're playing with some young guys. I have a senior running back that's Lindell Caston, has been running pretty well, speedy guy. But offensively, we're extremely young at the skill position player, and we have some senior linemen on the offensive line that those guys will give us an opportunity. Defensively, we have a mixture of youth and some experience. You know, Warren Roberts right now, kids committed to Tulane. Also, we have Jules Baptiste, offensive lineman, who's committed to Tulane as well. You know, those guys. And then, you know, we just really, the biggest thing for me, you said it earlier, Coach, I never, ever feel that I'm physical enough. And so that's the mentality and the mantra that I want to bring to our program is that no matter if we have speed, no matter if we have talent, we still have to be able to be physical at the point. And we have to be able to run the ball. We have to be able to stop the run, and then we just figure everything else after that.
That comes with time. I mean, I don't think kids walk into any program and say, hey, I'm a physical. You do get some. The hardcore kid, you do get some. But yeah. I found that out when a long time ago, the kids, they have to learn to be physical. And that comes from the culture that you set down. I think that's big. And Coach, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, the world knows about the big guy and that leaves. And I don't know what's happening in high school now that with the NIL thing, but that's a credit to St. Aug for them standing their ground and in terms of saying, hey, this is our program, this is what we stand for. So education is important here.
Well, I mean, we like I said, the principles by which the school was built, Coach, in the 50s, early 50s by the Josephite brothers is that we built this school to give black boys an opportunity to get a Catholic education. And at the time when it wasn't affordable or it wasn't feasible, so therefore we're always going to maintain our values, we're always going to maintain our integrity, our identity, and we're always going to do we have a saying that's for the glory, and we're always going to do everything with with the true intentions. Our school is on 2600 AP Touro, and it sits between law and hope. And we were able to use the law at that time to be able to give ourselves an opportunity to educate our young men and build leaders, and with the audacity of hope that we always should strive for the best in everything that we do. And sometimes that may not be what some people want, but it is what we hang our hat on, and is what we'll continue to be at St. Augustine.
No question, Coach. Coach, that's great, and you said it well said, Coach. And I tell you, we know what you stand for, and you're a great fit for that program. And I can see, I wouldn't want to play you again. And I know the Catholic League has another juggernaut in it. So all the luck in the world, and hope maybe you can get a couple of those tuba players to go both ways or something like that.
I got to toot your horn, man. I got to give you kudos. The last time we played, I don't think neither one of us slept after that battle,
Exactly. But, Coach, thank you so much. I know you got more work to do. God bless you and your family. And I'll be watching you, especially when you play Rumble, and I'll get a chance to see you on the sideline a little bit. But good luck to you this season. And
you have some free time now, man. Come on down to AP Touro, man. We'll sit down, chop it up, and talk some ball, man.
I would love to do that, Coach, especially if you've got some cheap wine, okay?
Hey, I got you, man.
Get some of that ultra wine.
We're a Catholic school. We're a Catholic church, so
Get some of that ultra wine from the priest. That's pretty good stuff, you know what I mean? Thank you so much, Coach.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All
right. We would like to thank Gulf Coast Responders for being a sponsor of the Let's Be Frank video podcast.
Based out of Gramercy, Louisiana, LSR produces Southern Cane Pure Cane Sugar, which is only grown, refined, and packaged in Louisiana. LSR utilizes the latest innovations in technology, as well as ensuring the growth and stability of Louisiana sugarcane farmers by integrating more than 800 growers in the industry's economic structure. Southern Cane is available in your local Associated Grocers and Rouse's supermarkets.
Since 1972, Riverlands Insurance Services has been dedicated to securing the best insurance products and services available to protect you, your family, your assets, and your business. Our goal has been to establish a strong relationship and partnership between you, the insurance company, and our agency, creating a circle of success that prepares for disasters before they actually happen.
We would like to thank Riverlands Insurance for sponsoring the Let's Be Frank video podcast.
Welcome back to our third and final segment of the Let's Be Frank video podcast. I'm your host, Jason Duhay. Joining me will be head coach Frank Monica, and this is the Let's Be Frank segment. Coach, this week you want to discuss allowing colleges to have a spring football game. I'm assuming you mean by that being able to play one another in a game.
Well, that's exactly right. For years and years, I've said this. I said, you sit around, college is the only place where they're not allowed to compete until the next year. For instance, let me give, in pro football, they get three games now. They used to have four. They get three exhibition games during the year before they open up the season. they're also allowed to go to different camps and maybe practice 2 or 3 days against another team. They practice a little scrimmage, they do some one-on-one, whatever it is, but they do that. In high school, teams are allowed to have a spring scrimmage against another team, and they're also allowed to have a fall scrimmage. They're also allowed to have a jamboree, all in preparation to open up the season to see exactly who the new players are, what new scheme I might add. There's so many benefits to having to do this. So why not allow a college to play a spring game against a opponent maybe that's close by? You realize with LSU Tulane spring game withdraw, you see colleges right now, Nebraska's, Alabama, their spring game, even versus the inter-squad game, will draw 40,000 to 50,000 people. Realize what a Tulane LSU matchup would make it. Suppose it's not that. A ULL, bringing somebody like a Southeastern or a Grambling or Southern, a spring game, just to see, you know, because now I get a chance to try my new guys and do it early. So in case there's an injury, you know, you got time to heal. And you don't have to play this game if you don't want to. But to me, I want to, as a head coach, I want to see this new guy. I want to see this guy that came in last year. I want to see him play. The seniors are gone. I need to come up with a new quarterback. I want to get him in and get him some fire and get him some snaps. I think, you know, if you don't do that, do like the NFL does. At least let me go participate against another team. Let's do some one-on-one offensive line, defensive line. Let's do a 7-on-7. Let's do a little scale pass. Let's do a little scrimmage portion, a little goal line portion. But give me somebody else so I can evaluate my talent. Because, listen, guys hate after a while. I dress next to this guy. I don't want to have to hit on him all spring. You know, it's not fair because he might not give me the best effort. Or we used to call it, you know, a brother-in-lawing, you know, where a guy will let me win this time. I think just think about that. I don't know why we wouldn't not consider that in college. Because, and the reason it's coming about, I'm hearing the thought, well, LSU should not schedule a tough opponent. Florida State should not schedule a tough opponent because you could get beaten, blah, blah, blah. Well, they just walk into the seat. Why don't you schedule a patsy? Well, the spring game will give you a little bit more, I think, of evaluation process that you can evaluate your football team. Well, why not do it? Just think, and take this money, the money that you draw, charge people, whatever, a minimal fee, but take that money and put it towards the NIL money. I just think it's a tremendous opportunity. And why the NCAA would not do that, I don't understand it. It doesn't mean anything. Exhibition games don't mean anything. Jamboree games don't mean anything. So why not have a spring football game against another opponent?
Thanks, Coach. And again, I've always wondered that every level at high school gets a spring game and they get 2 matchups before the regular season. So it kind of all balances out around 3. And not to mention the NFL players, they also get those opportunities during those spring camps. So yeah, I would love to see. I would go. That would get me off the couch and go and watch a game live. So I'm all about more football.
It'd give it that spring fix, you know, that football fix in the spring. So, I mean, the fans would love that also.
Coach, the XFL, I'm not even sure, it's the USFL at this point. That's not doing it for you?
No, that's not, you know, because it's even though I think that the quality of it is really good, and I think they play hard, but, you know, the time slots are not good enough for it. And there's a big, big market for college football. People want to see college football.
I'm with you. In our next segment, we have Blitz the Ball, Coach, where Coach answers some hard-hitting questions. Coach, what is the hip drop tackle and how is it impacting football?
That's a great question. I said, I think the most idiotic thing that the rules committee has come up with is a hip drop thing. Number one, they said that it was used 250 times last year. I didn't see it one time, and I'm still trying to explain exactly what it's like. It basically is when I grab a guy by the waist and I spin him down and I land on his legs. Like that. Now, tell me what guy practices this technique and when do you see it? If I'm tackling a running back like that, he's not a very good running back. You might see it happen every now and then to a quarterback because he's standing still and you get a chance to grab him by the waist. One, I think we're just a little bit over the top with this, putting this in. And how do you officiate it? And how do official knows what to look at when he sees it? The difference between that and a normal tackle. What they're going to do, they're going to force people to tackle differently, especially they're going to see more defensive backs taking the legs of receivers and running backs, and that's not what any running back or receiver wants. I much prefer to hit me up high because I'm protected. I'm protected in the shoulder pad. I got a $400 helmet on. So hit me up high, but don't take my legs. But this particular incident, I don't understand. I can't even describe it. And I have yet to see it. I'm still trying to look for it in the game to see where it's called. And that's putting more pressure on an official because somebody yelled from the side of the head, that's a hip drop. We didn't even know what that was. They had to give it this stupid name to begin with. So anyway, I don't see that it has any room in the NFL, but they come up with these wacky rules. Sooner or later, we will be playing 7-on-7 football with a flag.
Thanks, Coach. And I know you've always had that older school mentality on hitting and rules as well. How much of the game do you think, you know, with, for example, I know how strongly you feel about special teams, but not so much that rule in particular, because we talked about that, but what it represents. How do you feel about the changes in hit rules and targeting? And especially there's some targeting calls that are so difficult to make because they're so subjective. What are your thoughts and feelings on the extent in which some of these protective penalties are going?
Well, I think, again, we've just been really overboard, over the top with some of these. And they're not helping the game out. I feel sorry for kids that get called for targeting, especially on a crossing route. I don't know what they expect a linebacker to do. Here's a big tight end headed to me. How am I supposed to tackle this guy? Okay, I'll go take his leg because you don't want me to hit him up high. You know, so how do I hit him? Where do I put my head? I cannot control where that ball carrier is going to put his head in the last second. I cannot do that. And I think it's too severe of a penalty. Okay, if you do call it, don't suspend that guy for a half. I think that's out of the question. Happened to LSU in the Southern Cal game. You know, the guy, and I thought he got his shoulder in there. I didn't think that was him. He certainly didn't launch himself. And as I said on this channel many, many times before in the previous podcast, if a tackle is bringing his arms into the tackle, he's not trying to, that's considered helmet-to-helmet contact, and that should not be considered launching. But we really hurt in the game, and like I said before, all the things that you see, like we try to make it safe, and I get that, but all of a sudden they become also more controversial, and there's more pressure on the officials to call this.
Thanks, Coach, and we're going to go ahead and move on to our next segment, which is At the Water Cooler. And Coach, this week you want to discuss the Manning camp and some of the athletes that you got the opportunity to work with and watch during your time there.
Yeah, what I'm going to do, just basically, let me explain to everybody exactly what happens with the Manning camp. One, 45 college quarterbacks appeared there. They were invited to the Manning camp to come in. And what they do, they work as counselors like I do with the high school players. They work as their coaches. And the players rotate different stations. They do a 3-step drop, 5-step drop. That's what these players do. But also, they're there because they get 3 different throwing sessions on their own with Peyton and Eli. And that control these sessions. And in these sessions, they will throw like a 3-step drop. They'll do a 5-step drop. They'll do a play action. They'll throw the outs. They'll throw the digs. And they put on a little exhibition. And Peyton and Eli is there kind of putting them through the thing and letting them throw the ball. So they have 3 different things. Plus, they'll also have times where they will go into a room afterwards and Peyton and Eli will talk in confidence. This is all in confidence about different things that they want to add. And now, we don't know what they've said in those rooms, but that we're not privy to that information. But he can ask them questions like, okay, about agents. He can talk to them about the media. He can talk to them about coaches. He can talk to them about offense. He can talk to them about various things. And then these guys do an exhibition, and they call it Air It Out, and it's pretty cool. And they'll bring in receivers from LSU, Tulane, Southeastern, Nichols, naturally, because they're right there on the campus. And they'll throw against these guys and run all the route tree. But some of these guys that I saw, and these are just some now of the 45. I'm just going to mention some, okay? But the Manning camp has been tremendous avenue. We've had the last, I don't know how many years, Heisman Trophy winner go through the Manning camp, and he's got a lot of recognition that way. And I'm not saying the Manning camp made them win the Heisman, but there were some really, really good players. And you get a chance to evaluate their arms and know their character. And what I'm so impressed is how intelligent these guys are. You know, a lot of these guys have already finished 2 or 3 years, or maybe in some cases 4 years of college already. Some of them have their degrees already. And they're intelligent. They're easy to talk to. They're really good with the media. And they have a lot of poise. They're just classy guys. I mean, they're really a lot of class. And you get a chance to hobnob with them for 4 days. So you get to know them just a little bit. Let me just throw a couple of names out. Brady Cook from Missouri. Jason Dart from Jackson Dart. I'm sorry, from Ole Miss. Quinn Evers from Texas. I just think he's tremendous. And He's a guy that I would pick to win the Heisman, even though Archie Manning is right behind him, but he's really good. Will Howard from Ohio State, Cade Kublik from Clemson, Riley Leonard from Notre Dame, Graham Mertz from Florida, who got hurt recently, Jalen Monroe from Alabama, Garrett Nussmeier, class act, heck of a quarterback, Connor Wigman from Texas A&M, I mean, Blake Shapen from Mississippi State, Will Rogers from Washington. I mean, anybody you can think of was there that had some notoriety. But the Manning camp is really a good venue. You get a chance to evaluate them as a thrower. Now, you don't know what's in between your ears here, but you get a chance to evaluate them, to watch their ball in the air, the action, their quick release, their arm strength, and things of that nature. And some of them, you'll be surprised, that don't have that great arm, but they really get a lot of completions and they get the ball there because they know their offense, much like the Drew Breeses of the world, and even the Peyton himself over time, because they were just student of the game. But I just wanted to mention that, and you know, Archie and Buddy Teeven started this camp years and years ago, but it was Peyton Manning's idea, and it's grown. It had 1,400 campers this past year, and that was most of our high school quarterbacks and receivers. But every year, all these college quarterbacks, some of them return for 2 and 3 years at a time. So it's a great venue, and it's great for Thibodeau and Nicholls State to actually house them and bring this to Louisiana. It's probably the biggest and foremost quarterback camp in all the country.
Thanks, Coach. And we're going to go ahead and move on to our final segment, which is our lock of the week. And apparently I was accused of stealing somebody's pick last week. So I'm going to pick first this week, so I don't get accused of stealing anybody's pick. This week I have Arizona State on the road, -2.5 against Texas State. Big win against Mississippi State a week ago. I'm literally going against every single trope and trend. Never bet the road favorite. Never bet a team off their highest high. But I don't know. I mean, they looked really good a week ago against Mississippi State. How much of that's due to the Bulldogs not being quite where they need to be? I don't know, but I like the Sun Devils in this matchup.
Oh, that's good. So you're going way out there because it'll probably be a late game, and you're just trying to hide that pick a little bit. I know what you're doing, Jason.
I like to mix it up, Coach.
Yeah, they'll come in. We're all asleep when that score. You might change that score. Okay, here I'm going to go with Florida State. Now, Florida State is not nearly as good, but they're going to play Memphis, and it's the spread's about 6, and I think that Memphis is a good football team, but I think Florida State they're ready to break out. They need a win here. Coach Norville is a very good coach. I think he's going to have them going. And he's not about to ditch this season. I think he's going to bounce back. And so I'm going to go with Florida State and Seminole. So I'm going to do – what is that deal?
The tomahawk.
I saw that firsthand that, you know, I saw many butts also because they were always scoring. But anyway, that's who I'm going with. So hopefully that we can go 2-0.
Coach, I still, you just reminded me of an old classic, so I still tell the story. So for those who don't know, a Zombie Nation had come out, and of all people, Coach, we're in the weightlifting room, and Coach Monica says, "Jason, come over here." I'm like, "What's up, Coach?" He goes, What's that song? Want to play it after we score a touchdown? I go, "Which one?" He goes, "You know, the one that goes, oh, 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 oh." And he's singing Zombie Nation. I about lost it, y'all. I mean, I never would have thought I could hear Coach Monica sing Zombie Nation, but that made my year. I still talk about it to this day, but I was waiting for you to do the tomahawk cheer, Coach. I was waiting for it. Maybe next time.
I still don't know the words to Silent Night, Jason, so don't worry about that.
All right, so that'll do it for this week. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, X, and Twitter. Again, Facebook is at the Let's Be Frank Video Podcast. X, Instagram, and TikTok is at the LBF Podcast. And that'll do it. So, Coach, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
First of all, guys, I'd like everybody to go to church. Remember your maker. Also, let's pray that this storm spares us from any injury and you know, personal destruction. Our next week guest will be Coach Greg Bourne from new head football coach at Hornville High School.
Great. As Coach said, let me reiterate that message. You know, please stay safe. Hopefully you and your family stay safe during this time. And again, just make sure everybody take care of each other. You know, it's a tough time for everybody. And again, saying prayers for everybody out there and wishing everybody the best during this time. But that'll do it for our show. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. And I want to go ahead and say on behalf of Justin Thomas, of course, head coach Frank Monaco, I'm Jason Duhay. And remember, Leslie Bontemps, relay the good times roll.